You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, I'm Robert Wright. I run the Non-Zero Foundation, which produces all the shows on Blogging Heads TV and Meaning of Life TV. We host a variety of voices, some of them pretty unorthodox, and we encourage dialogue that is sharp but civil. We think fostering constructive conversation is especially important now that America and the world are looking kind of fragile. If you agree that our mission is important, I hope you'll consider helping us shoulder the cost. You can do that by becoming one of our cherished patrons at patreon.com/nonzerofoundation. That's NONZEROFOUNDATION. Thanks. We need your help, and we deeply appreciate it.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
Welcome to the DMZ, everybody.
It is Thursday. It is the last pre-election DMZ of 2020.
Amazing.
I believe 4 years ago, we had maps.
Yes, that was a bad idea to document our predictions so clearly.
I think we were both
never going to do that again.
We're both really optimistic, right? I mean, optimistic from a Democratic perspective.
No, well, we both thought Hillary was going to win. I had Trump winning Florida and North Carolina.
Okay,
I had it very close. I had Hillary edging Trump basically because I thought Pennsylvania would go to Hillary.
Right, right. So we're not making that mistake again.
No.
But what would you say are the chances Trump wins?
Well, so first of all, I think we should acknowledge the Trump PTSD that we suffer from. And I think that, you know, it's funny because in 2012, there were, you know, and we might have talked about this before, but, you know, in 2012, there were all these stories about how we couldn't trust the polls. Romney was doing better. You know, Obama had like unemployment rate was still high. And the methodology of the pollsters was wrong. And besides, Romney's having these huge crowds in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And so don't believe what the so-called experts are saying. You know, it's, you know, don't trust the experts. And so Obama wins. And I think part of the lesson I learned from that is, you know, when these Republicans come to you and spin you and say, like, don't believe the pollsters, be skeptical, which, of course, I was when Trump started having big rallies in Pennsylvania and when all the polls said Trump, you know, wasn't going to win. And so I think the point here is that sometimes we overlearn the lessons of history and we're always fighting the last war.
So to go back to the original question.
Okay.
Is there what is the chance Trump wins?
I think there is I'm stalling here. I'm stalling.
is it not zero?
It's not zero, Bill. It is not zero.
I'm going to go as far and say it's zero. I'm going to say zero. He cannot win.
Well, I applaud you for making this an entertaining episode. Bill, have you done the 270towin.com thing?
I haven't done it. I haven't done my own map yet. But start doing it.
That's when you get unsure.
I feel very sure about Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Nebraska too, and very, very, almost very sure about Arizona.
Let's say you give Trump Arizona and Florida. How does that play out?
I mean, if Biden wins Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, we're done.
Okay.
I mean, look.
And you're very sure Biden's going to win Pennsylvania.
Yes. Let me put it this way.
Not sure about anything.
I thought in 2016 that sure this race tightened up some, but Hillary's been ahead pretty much the whole way through. She even ticked up a bit nationally at the very, very end. You know, the Comey letter seemed to shrink things, but we got past that. Now things are getting a little bit better. So that last little bit is going to tilt her way. People are going to have a reality check, a gut check, and say, I just can't do this. I can't really vote for Donald Trump. That's insane. And so she's going to end up overperforming the polls, and it's going to be a healthy margin. That was my attitude at the time. Now, but you go back and look at the data, and it's quite clear that Trump made a lot of gains in the last couple weeks of the race, not just nationally. But I mean, Michigan is very dramatic in the Real Clear Politics average. It's a 7-point narrowing of the gap. So everyone says Michigan polls were wrong. Well, yeah, the final average was wrong. But if you saw any other race where the underdog candidate is making up 7 points in 2 weeks, you're saying that candidate's got a hot hand. And that could carry over on election day. And that was happening. I think he edged ahead in Florida and North Carolina in the Real Clear Politics average. And he was already ahead in Ohio, and that was widening. So there was lots of data to look at to say, okay, Trump's making this a race here. And I was blinded enough by a sense of rationality. Who could vote for this guy to not fully see it? So
I think we all were the.
But where is that data today? We are five days away. Where can you point to anything that says this is getting tighter in the places where it matters? You know, it's a little tight in Florida, mind you. I mean, there's and the one thing that's a little tricky here is, you know, so we the main averages people are looking at now is the Real Clear Politics and the 538. There are some others. The Times has an average. The Post has an average. But, you know, 538 takes every single poll, regardless of origin, but does adjustments on things. So if it's a pollster with a Republican lean, it makes an adjustment for that. It factors in. I think it takes some of the state polling data and kind of shoves it into the national average and other factors and whatnot. Forgive me for not saying this accurately, but that's my understanding. Whereas Real Clear Politics is just straight average over the most recent poll. So polls drop off. I think with 538, they don't drop anything off. They you know, the farther away from today, the less relevance it has, but it doesn't totally remove itself from the system. So Real Clear Politics has a couple of pollsters, Trafalgar, Susquehanna, Rasmussen, that have known Republican leans. And if they come in late, which I think is the case in a number of the states, so you get like five polls in the average and two of them are Susquehanna and Trafalgar, that might tilt your average. So Are we having real momentum in Florida, or is it that Republican lean factor? But be that as it may, if I take everything at Real Clear Politics at total face value, I do not see that Trump momentum in nearly enough states, let alone nationally, to say, okay, the comeback is happening. It would have to be the greatest comeback of all time to come back from at minimum 8 points down nationally with 1 week to go, and you're an elected incumbent to boot. So I do not see it.
Okay, I got a bunch of things to say. Number one, you know, some people believe that hell could be different things unique to them. I believe that there is a hell where it just plays our November 2016 Blogging Heads episode over and over again, where you explain to me why I shouldn't be worried about Trump winning on, you know, on a loop. Number one. Number two, I should plug, I just had David French on my podcast yesterday, and he agrees with you. He actually says that its election is going to be very, very bad for Trump. And if anything, he says that if anything's happening, French believes that the pollsters are actually giving Trump too much, because they've been chastened by what happened in 2016, and so they're actually going the other direction and trying to find these non-college educated white voters and add them into their polls. That's according to French. And I would recommend, we had a long discussion about a whole bunch of stuff, but we ended on the election. Bill, the one thing that I would caution on here is I think the big lesson for 2016 for me is humility. And I think we need to just we don't know what's going to, you know, happen. And we see through a glass darkly. And I know now in 2020, you can look back and you can see the mistakes that we all made. And maybe we won't make those same mistakes again because now we're aware of them. But you were a smart guy back in 2016 also, and you didn't see them then. Maybe there's something happening now that you're not seeing now.
But what my point is, you know, I willfully blinded myself in 2016. The data was available to see, and I misinterpreted it. And right now, I just don't see it at all.
Well, it's not going to be the same data, but I guess my point is I agree with your premise that none of us had the imagination to actually believe that the American public would elect Donald Trump. And that skewed our perception. I'm wondering if we believe that the American public would re-elect Trump now. Could that be impacting our perception?
Well, I mean, impacting it because every bit of data that we have says that they don't want to. I mean, let's look at just the basics here. Incumbent president, never been above water in job approval the entire time. And is now ending the race, not with the biggest crisis of his presidency improving, but worsening, and him actively doing everything possible to not address it. I mean, there's just some sort of glaring red lights that we should not willfully blind ourselves to now. I mean, so there's this one poll in Wisconsin, ABC Washington Post, that showed Trump down 17 points. And that may well be an outlier. I'm not predicting he's going to lose by 17 points. But it's not insane to think about, because Wisconsin's having one of the more severe spikes of coronavirus right now. And Trump went out there less than a week ago to say, we're rounding the turn. I mean, that's the kind of thing that can make people, you know, break their brains and say, okay, I am done here. When you see it all around you and a guy is blatantly lying to you. I mean, I remember when I lived in Washington, D.C., it was the blizzard of 90, I think it was 98, and Mayor Marion Barry was on TV saying, we're plowing all the side streets. I'm like, you are not plowing all the side streets. I'm looking out my window and you are not plowing my side street. That's the kind of thing that blows your mind. And so I just think everything that we have, now I will grant that Trump has a loyal base.
Is that what pushed you to vote for Sheriff Maurice Taylor or Turner? I'm forgetting my D.C. politics.
No, I voted for Carol. What's her last name? There was this moderate Republican who always ran for stuff.
Oh, wow.
And her last name's escaping me. But that was one of my lone Republican votes in my life was voting for her. Anyway, so, you know, he's got a hardcore base. There's early vote data to suggest that some of them are turning out. You know, you look at John Ralston, who is the dean of the Nevada Reporters, and he's saying, look, you know, Trump's getting his rural vote in Nevada. This race is not done in Nevada. You know, polls show Biden up by around 5 in Nevada. I don't see anything in the data to suggest that that is wildly wrong, because Biden's still getting his vote in the urban areas, but I think he's properly cautioning that, look, that Trump enthusiasm is still there in the redder parts of the state.
Yeah.
So I'm not as confident it's going to be a giant blue wave. I'm not confident Biden can win Florida or Georgia or Texas or North Carolina. I'm pretty confident Dems will take the Senate, but I'm not confident it's going to be a massive victory. You know, that's the kind of part that's hard for polls to capture. You know, that the intensity, the turnout factor, that's the volatility at the end of the race. You know, it could go the other way where people, you know, so much Republican vote is being saved for election day. Because Trump is so poisoned it amongst Republicans that it's an okay thing to do, to vote early. That a bunch of folks are saying, I'll do it on election day when you're supposed to do it. And how many folks there are going to say, oh, just forget it. This thing is so baked. Just what's the point? I mean, that's the kind of thing that could make Trump underperform polls. But I certainly take it as a possibility that he can squeeze out a lot of that base and make things tighter than we might expect. But that would have to happen to such a degree to overcome all the data that we have right now.
You know, the thing with the Electoral College, though, Bill, is like, all the national trends, the feelings that we have, the news cycle, if he wins Pennsylvania, you know what I mean? Like, that's the part of it that makes this so dicey.
And the one thing that, I don't love about my own analysis is, my hope of hopes is Florida and North Carolina get called early, get called at all in Biden's favor. And so even if Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin are slow, everyone's going to know, look, because Florida counts its early votes early. North Carolina counts its early votes early. Their polls close early. Florida was called for Trump by the Associated Press at 10:50 in the evening, Tuesday night, 4 years ago, and only won Florida by 1 point. It wasn't a blowout state. So I certainly think it's plausible. Look, Obama won Florida in 2012 by a little less than 1 point, and Florida went for Trump by 1.2 points. And I don't know if you know, there's a guy named Steve Schall or Schale, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, who's a Democratic operative. He's with Biden's super PAC right now, Unite the Country. And he's a Florida guy. He's done a lot of deep Florida dives. He did a lot of Florida early vote analysis 4 years ago. He's doing some of it now. He said it's going to be less because I'm busy with the super PAC. But he's saying, look, there's mixed data out there in the Florida early vote. This is a close state. It will always be a close state. There are reasons why it's a close state, and don't expect it to not be a close state. And so I take him at his word on that, and I don't lock it in Biden's column. At the same time, if this is a state that moved from essentially 1 point Obama to 1 point Trump over the 4 years, and there's a pretty solid blue wind blowing here, I think that is probably going to tip Biden's way by not a lot. And that could well get called before midnight Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think – so I'm not going to make the whole prediction, but I just – again, this could be Trump PTSD, but I feel like Trump's going to win Florida. And
I mean, it wouldn't shock me.
If that happens, no matter what happens after that, it becomes a very tense night.
Yeah, I think if
maybe
Florida gets called for Trump, I mean, again, it doesn't at all mean he wins because Biden has so many other paths. But because Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin might be counted slowly, and if the election day vote is very red and the early returns for Trump in those states show him up, and it's the mail vote that gets counted later that where he catches up, then you get Trump spinning all the conspiracy theories out.
Quick update. Lunch with Mom yesterday.
Yeah.
Still standing firm on the not voting.
Like, does she know what you're doing when you're asking these questions? Does she feel put on the spot now?
I think she kind of looks forward to it. I think she kind of enjoys it.
Like, I wonder, USC does this tracking poll where they interview the same people all the time.
Yeah.
I think it's the only poll out there that's doing that.
I do that informally.
And I just wonder, I mean, I'm happy to see alternative methodologies being used. I'm not saying it's bad that they do it. I just wonder to what extent is being cognizant that you're being polled in some way all the time. Does that affect your thinking?
Yeah. Well, I just talked to our mutual friend out in Arizona who, feels like it's a jump ball
in general, in Arizona.
In Arizona.
Still, because I thought he'd possibly gone the other way on that.
Well, I think he's been back and forth, but he said that any other Republican president would win by 5 to 7 points. But right now for Trump, it's a jump ball. So,
well, yeah, I'll say this about Arizona. I think this is relevant to Florida too. Now, I made a map right after the 2018 midterms that I put on Twitter and it got shared a lot, which was tabulating the House popular vote in every state. And if that's what 2020 looked like, this is what it would be. And, normally you wouldn't use it as a metric because midterm races can be wildly different from presidential years. And I'm not predicting that it is going to be this way. But my sense was is that our politics has gotten polarized enough that people's House votes were tracking their general preferences. And that might have more import than it would in a normal year. Obviously 2010 midterms didn't predict 2012, obviously. So it doesn't always work that way. But, when you look at that map, Florida's red, but Arizona is blue. And notably, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Iowa are blue on the House popular vote map. And I'd always said, I think Iowa is trending back blue because of that. There are so many people at the time for a long while saying Iowa is Trump. That is not a swing state anymore. And I said, I don't see that. I mean, how can, if you have more people voting for Democrats for the House in 2018, how can you assume that? And I think that's bearing out right now. So Arizona was blue on the House level in 2018. It was blue on the Senate because Sinema beat McSally. And now, the Arizona polls, they narrowed somewhat from where they were in the summer. So they're like 2-3 points now, which is not like, firm Democratic territory, but it has been stable. And I go back to the 2012, Nate Silver circa 2012 analysis when he was being fairly confident about Obama's chances, saying, yeah, these national polls are very tight, but the state polling is very stable. And Arizona has been stable. And that's why if I'm making my map, I'm pretty confident putting Arizona there. I mean, not quite as confident as Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, but pretty confident.
Well, I'm glad someone's confident. I am not confident. I think if I have to bet, I bet on Biden. I think Biden's going to win for all the reasons that we've discussed, including things just like Biden's better than Hillary. Mm-hmm. And last time Trump didn't have a record to run on. And I don't think that the Hunter Biden story is the James Comey story or the Hillary email story. And so, and then last time Trump only won by 77,000 votes in three states, right? He won three states by 77,000 votes. So good luck pulling that off twice. COVID, as you mentioned. So it's hard to come up with a reason why Trump wins. But yet here we are. I'm not comfortable saying that he's going to lose.
Now, I talked about this in my YouTube shareable series last night. So forgive me for those who have listened to that and have to hear me say it all over again.
You can never have too much sharing.
But I'll ask you first, what do you make of the trio of Supreme Court rulings that first said, okay, Wisconsin, you can't count your late arrival ballots. They have to be received by election day. But you can in Pennsylvania, and in North Carolina, the debate was it going to be 3 days versus 9 days? And the court said, okay, it can be 9 days. What does that tell you about the election? What does it tell you about the court?
Well, I don't think, I've not done a deep dive into this. I don't think it tells you, I think what it tells you about the court, I assume, is that they're following state law, because these are not, it's not a one size fits all template, right? I mean, these decisions are in some cases like almost contradictory in terms of like who you think it might benefit. Mm-hmm. I think it is weird that we have a patchwork of different state laws in terms of like it's weird that we have this patchwork. I'm assuming that they are deferring to that their decisions based on what the state law is. But what do you think?
Well, forgive me. I don't know the exact details that the Pennsylvania decision is hinging on. I know that in Wisconsin, you know, there's state legislation that says that you can't count late arrival ballots, you know, postmarked but late arrival. You can't count them.
And is this new legislation or this is standing?
I don't know if it was new or standing, but I know that the Wisconsin Supreme Court said, okay, we're in a pandemic. You can count these.
And, okay. So so I'm following you. The law in Wisconsin was you can't count them if they're not postmarked by election day.
Correct.
But then the Wisconsin Supreme Court said, screw the law.
I don't know if they were that brazen about it. I don't know if I didn't read their ruling, so I can't say if they had some other justification
for it.
I'm
dumbing this down for me.
But I think roughly yes. And okay. Certainly that's
we're
the
in
view.
A pandemic. These are extraordinary circumstances. I would say the court can't just do that. A court can't just up and – because that's legislating from the bench.
So Kavanaugh, in his opinion on this, cites Bush v. Gore – and says, because at the time, if you recall, there was the Florida courts were ruling saying, you know, go ahead with these recounts. And a lot of folks on the Democratic side said, this conservative court, this federalist states' rights Supreme Court, they're not going to want to get involved in a dispute between the state legislature and the state Supreme Court because that's a state matter. And they said, oh, hell yes, we can, because what takes priority is what the state legislatures want, and the state courts are not allowed to rewrite what state legislatures have determined.
Yeah, that sounds fair to me.
I'm sure it would.
Well, no, it may not. It probably isn't good policy. I mean, I think that the legislature should come back in session or should have come back in session and did a one-time mm-hmm. change, you know, for the 2020 election cycle because of COVID. But if we have the rule of law and we have decided that the branch of government that actually writes the law is the legislature, then I think we need to honor that.
So Kavanaugh says that in his Wisconsin ruling. I think it was a concurring opinion, not the controlling opinion, but nevertheless, he said it, and he's in the majority. And so everyone flips out. Here's Kavanaugh. I mean, Kavanaugh, Roberts, and Barrett were literally on the Bush legal team in Bush v. Gore. Here's Kavanaugh citing Bush v. Gore. And so everyone flips out and says, oh, my God, they're going to do Bush v. Gore all over again. But then you get North Carolina, where there was a recently passed law that said, okay, you can accept ballots for 3 days after Election Day if they're postmarked properly. And then the State Board of Elections says, we're going to make it 9.
Okay.
And Kavanaugh, actually, I don't think Kavanaugh wrote an opinion for this, but apparently there's a difference in the law that was passed or some pre-existing law said the State Board of Elections has latitude to make changes in cases of natural disaster. And in the right. Gorsuch dissent, he says, this is not a national disaster. In no reasonable mind, this is a natural disaster. They should have to stick to the letter of the law. But obviously, Kavanaugh and Roberts didn't see it that way.
Right.
I think
I'm with Kavanaugh. I'd love to see if they define natural disaster. They probably didn't.
I don't think they wrote an opinion. I think they let it.
But if there is
silent.
A law that the legislature passed that would empower the Board of Elections to make this change, you know, unilaterally, then that's a different story.
Now, Gorsuch said that this ruling was even more egregious than what was going on in Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. I mean, that's how he
only if they define natural disaster as a hurricane, wildfire.
That's what Gorsuch is looking at. Now, this goes back to the Amy Coney Barrett point. Even textualists can disagree about what words mean.
They should do is that law should say like a national emergency or a natural disaster.
Wait, this is the whole thing. Like There's no way to write law that is that perfect and that clear in every circumstance. And that's why you have courts to do interpretations. And so you can say all day long, well, the state Supreme Court should interpret this. But guess what? The U.S. Supreme Court's going to. People are going to interpret. It's going to happen.
Sure. But I mean, I think we can obviously try our best to adhere to what the law intends and the spirit of the law. And if the law had specified what they mean by natural disaster, I would defer to that. But
So, but at minimum, I would say one, you know, Kavanaugh set a principle that he stuck to in two cases, even though it benefited different parties or on the surface it benefited different parties. Yeah. Some people think discounting late arrivals is going to hurt Republicans because the Democrats are getting in their votes super early.
Exactly. He's doing exactly what a Supreme Court justice should do, in my opinion.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying this makes Kavanaugh the greatest justice of all time. I know there's other flaws in the Wisconsin opinion that people can point out, but he set a principle and he stuck to it. Give him credit for that. Amy Coney Barrett, you know, I had people tell, I wrote a Twitter thread or I said it would not be rational for Barrett to come in the court and for her very first act, do something brazenly political on behalf of the person that nominated her. It doesn't serve her interest or the court's interest.
Especially when it now looks like he's on his way out. I mean, I'm hoping that she doesn't factor this into her decision-making.
I mean, I don't know what she's factoring in, but
if she were, her smart move would be to do the opposite of what the left
exactly. And so, you know, why besmirch your own credibility out of the gate? Why besmirch the court's credibility out of the gate, which would turbocharge Democratic calls for packing the court? Because if that happens, guess what? She loses all of her power. Why would she do that? Now, granted, I said it in the tweet. I don't know if she's going to act this way. I'm just saying she would be foolish to act in the partisan way. And people immediately said to me, she already showed her hand. She did the photo op with Trump. She did a campaign ad for him. She's obviously a partisan actor. And here we are.
We have so many discussions now, Bill. I lose track of if we talked about this on our DM Zoom, which is our exclusive VIP conversation, or if we talked about this in the big DMZ right here. But Trump could have nominated Matt Gaetz, mm-hmm. and they could have had a quid pro quo that said, you nominate me and I will do what you want. Mm-hmm. And would they have gotten 50 Republicans plus Mike Pence? I wouldn't bet against it.
Right.
So we should be thanking God that we got Amy Coney Barrett.
I'm not going to go that far, Matt, for multiple reasons.
Okay. Do you agree with me that Trump could have nominated a complete hack toady who had no experience or temperament or qualifications, and the Republicans very well might have confirmed that person?
I think he nominated somebody who was much more likely to be loyal to conservative judicial philosophical interests than she is to be in service of Trump's short-term political interests.
Right, but do you agree with me that Trump could have nominated somebody who would have been loyal to his short-term political interests and might have gotten that person confirmed?
Sure, absolutely.
So I think this is – I don't want to quibble over this, but I'm just saying if you are a person of the left and you are really afraid of Trump and conservatives and this power grab – the fact is he picked a, in my opinion, competent, qualified, and I would say honorable.
But the bigger Democratic fear with Barrett is she is going to overturn Roe v. Wade. She's going to overturn the Affordable Care Act. She's going to make it impossible. Anything Biden passes will get overturned, and it'll make it impossible for Democrats to govern. That's the big fear. And I'm not arguing that fear is all of a sudden dissipated now. But What I still think is unknown is, and again, we don't know what her mindset is. If she's thinking politically or strategically, or she literally said, look, I just can't do this case. It's too soon. I'm just going to judge cases case by case. I have no longer term, malevolent plot here. But I think to the extent that she does think strategically, it is an indication that she has some capacity for political optics. And maybe she and others have a concern about overstepping and bringing on court packing. So, and here's a test. Monday. So tomorrow the court deliberates on whether to accept the case involving Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban. A 15-week abortion ban is pre-viability of the fetus. It is a law designed to go right at the heart of Roe and Casey. You can't uphold this law and maintain the Roe-Casey framework. So do they take that case? I mean, it takes four of the nine to take a case. And apparently when you deliberate on the Friday, it is typical you make the announcement on the Monday whether you're taking it or not. So I don't know if it's a certainty they're going to announce on Monday, but it looks probable. And I would think.
Do we know who voted? I assume we know who voted to take the case.
No, you don't know. You don't know. You just know they took it. You know they took it, and that means there are four somewhere that took it. But logically speaking, you would only take it if you wanted to overturn Roe v. Wade. There's no other point to take it unless you're thinking the other way. I'm the liberals. We're going to take it. We're going to drive a stake through it. You have to be pretty confident you'd have the votes to do that then. Yeah. The incrementalist route is to not take it, let the lower court ruling stand, which strikes it down, and just not say anything about it. So you'll know or a sense of a pretty good idea of what their plan is, whether they take that case or not on Monday.
Interesting. I just want to make – so we talked about – in terms of the voting, though, we talked about Wisconsin and North Carolina. Is there another example? I thought you said
Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania was one
the 3 days.
They had
Pennsylvania, you can do 3 days after, right?
I forget what the exact time frame is in Pennsylvania, but they initially had the ruling that was 4-4, where they said, okay, we're not going to have an emergency injunction to stop what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did. The Republican litigants refiled, clearly hoping that Barr would come and save the day. And many folks thought that she would on both sides of the ledger. And Barrett said, nope, I'm not going to get involved. And it was unanimous to redo it. But then there's a Gorsuch Alito Thomas opinion saying, don't interpret this to mean that we can't review this after the election. We can still throw these ballots out if we determine, because we've not ruled on the merits of the case. We've only not done an emergency stay of the state Supreme Court ruling. We could intervene later and say these ballots don't count. Now, so this is freaking out some people, like they're going to do a serious Bush v. Gore and flip the state after the fact. But it's not five justices saying that, it's three. Kavanaugh Roberts didn't join that opinion, and Barrett stayed out of it. So I'm not as unnerved. I mean, I think it's a pretty jerk move on their part to do that.
Yeah.
But some people look at that as this shows how partisan they're being. In my mind, it's kind of how ridiculously obsessed they get about legalistic minutia. They believe so much in their theory of the case, they're willing to say something terribly stupid politically that they don't even have the votes to follow through on. But they just had to say it. They just had to mansplain it. It's like, this is just a horrible case and we don't like it. So I get the sense that there is some capacity for political aptitude on the part of Roberts, Kavanaugh, and Barrett. And so I would not be surprised. In fact, I almost kind of expect, I mean, granted, I could be maybe proved foolish very quickly, that they would not take the abortion case on Monday because they have a long time frame. There's like 17 other abortion cases in the pipeline. They're not all designed to go at the heart of Roe Casey, but they could certainly weaken it significantly. Why not take a shot at those cases and not risk a massive backlash favor of court backing right out of the gate?
Yeah, I think you make a compelling point.
Does that make you sad though? Are you sad that I'm going to overturn right out of the box?
Incremental gain. No, No, Bill, it doesn't, and I'll tell you why. Because I am temperamentally a person. This is a problem for conservatives, not right wingers, but for conservatives, is that I really don't like conflict. I think there's too much chaos happening right now in America, and I would like to calm things down a little bit. That's a conservative temperamental thing. So I would be okay if we take a couple months off from the culture war and chill. Let's and then we can come back and.
But this is the thing. Like, if Barrett doesn't overturn Roe v. Wade right away, you know, that's not necessarily huge cause for celebration on the left, because it just means she has a longer game plan in mind.
Yeah.
As do the others possibly. And you know, if you're a court packer, you know, you might want them to act brazenly off the top to make it easier to pack.
Totally.
And so if the court doesn't force the issue, and Biden and other Democrats who are more moderate say, look, we don't have to go that far just yet. We got time to play with. You know, who has the edge in that race now, in that slow race? On one hand, you got a 6-3 majority that could do stuff for the next 30 years. On the other hand, Alito and Thomas aren't going to live forever. And we'll see how good the Democrats do on the Senate front.
Alito's not that. Alito's like 60-some?
No, Alito is 72 and Thomas is 70.
Young.
Well, he hasn't been there as long. You know, Thomas has been there since, you know, 1991. It's almost 30 years. Yeah. But he got there very young. You know, he was the Barrett of the time. And so he could be there for a long time. So you don't know. You just don't know. Things happen. People die. People get sick of it.
Stop.
Who knows?
Yeah.
It's possible Democrats could be able to replace these justices in due course because if the court's not moving rapidly to throttle Democratic governance, you can take your time and see what happens.
Yeah, there's no permanent victories or permanent defeats. And as Mitch McConnell says in his book, The Long Game, the only way you can lose is if you quit or die. So. We should end at least, or before we end, we should talk about the Senate.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah. So you're confident in Biden.
Yes.
Let's put you on the spot for this one. How many seats will Democrats control in January?
Well, I'm pretty confident of a minimum of 51. I think Maine, Colorado, Arizona, Iowa, North Carolina, there have been, you know, in some cases, small but stable leads the whole way through. I think a lot is and the Biden numbers, I think, are kind of commensurate with that. Now, in the case of Iowa and North Carolina, I think the Senate candidates are running a bit ahead of Biden. But Biden is still competitive. You know, Democrats are still energized there. And you have that House popular vote aspect, I think, in Iowa. In North Carolina, I think you just have a better trend because you have the Democrat governor is very popular there. He's going to win in a walk. So I feel pretty good about those states. And then after that, you know, the polling in many cases is spotty. And I feel you have a pretty good amount of polling in Georgia. And I might even give Ossoff a bit of an edge in the full-term race. You got two races in Georgia, the full and the special. They have different rules there. But I think it's probably likely that both Senate races in Georgia go to runoffs because they need to clear 50 in Georgia to avoid a runoff. And the Ossoff-Purdue race, there's a third-party candidate. In the other race, it's a top-two deal where all the parties are on the ballot at the same time, and there's multiple Democrats, so it's hard for Raphael Warnock to get to 50. Not out of the question, but I think hard. Then after that, you're talking Kansas, Montana, Alaska, South Carolina, and then in the bigger reaches, Texas, Kentucky, Mississippi. Now, if Democrats won all of these, like literally everything I just said, it would be 60 votes. I don't think I missed the state there. And this is assuming that Democrats lose Alabama, which I do assume that Doug Jones won't survive in Alabama. I'm trying to make sure I didn't miss anything. I think I got them all. Now, obviously, Kentucky, Mississippi. If you look at the Cook ratings, Kentucky and Mississippi are likely Republican. So you're talking a really crazy result if they actually went Democrat. Let's take that out. If everything else went blue, and that's all the lean Ds, all the toss-ups, all the lean Rs, that gets you to 58. If I take out the lean Rs, which are Alaska, Kansas, Texas, now you're at 55. So South Carolina is in the toss-up. Montana is in the toss-up. And, you know, the polling there is just sketchy. So I just have a hard time being very confident in anything there because there's something we have a lot to work with. I do think there is a general blue wave happening. You see in even very, very red states like a West Virginia or Missouri, Biden doing better in the polling and what polling exists than what Hillary did. That just tells me there's just a national push in that direction. And so I'm inclined to think that could tip Montana, maybe tip Kansas, maybe tip South Carolina. I'm less confident in Alaska and Texas. But I'm hard pressed to give you a firm prediction beyond the 51 because I just don't think we have a lot of information there.
Okay. Well, I'll just say I'm much more confident predicting Democrats are going to take the Senate than I am predicting Biden will win.
You're more confident in the Senate.
What's that?
You think Trump could win with a Democratic Senate?
I think it's possible. He's obviously going to lose the popular vote by a lot. But I think it's possible. Yeah, maybe it's just because the stakes are lower. But I feel more confident predicting that Democrats will take the Senate than that Biden will win. You know, I think both are going to happen. I feel more confident saying Democrats are going to take the Senate.
That strikes me as hard to pull off.
If you think about it in terms of the states, though, I mean, you know, like Pennsylvania isn't one of the states that we're thinking about in terms of the U.S. Senate this cycle, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens in Pennsylvania doesn't impact my Senate predictions, for example.
Well, if Republicans are winning the Senate, that means they're not losing North Carolina and Iowa, which are battleground states. And perhaps not losing Maine. I think Maine is like a little tighter in recent days.
I think it's possible that Trump wins Arizona and McSally loses Arizona. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's possible. I think you get to 51 or 52 Dems just by like Colorado and Arizona and Maine. And I guess you need one more, right?
I lost count.
Yeah. Well, because I'm assuming Doug Jones is going to lose.
Right. So Democrats need four if Jones loses.
Right. So Arizona, Colorado, Maine, and you need one more.
You need Iowa or North Carolina. One of those is likely the fourth.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'm not 100% sure how I want to factor it in is the money question, because Democrats just swamping Republicans on money. And I find it hilarious. Like, I still have people in my feed saying when I talk about the court not being brazenly partisan, people always come back to me and say, Citizens United, Shelby County, they're doing this to make it impossible for Democrats to win. And I'm like, you know, Democrats have outraised Republicans in every presidential election since Citizens United occurred. So Shelby is the Voting Rights Act case where, you know, it basically said, Voting Rights Act had said, if you were a state that had a history of racial discrimination, you couldn't make changes to your voting laws without being pre-cleared by the Justice Department. And the Roberts Court said, you know, that probationary period has gone on for too long and you don't need it anymore. Since then, Democrats have won races in all of these states. They've won congressional races in Georgia. They've won Senate in Arizona. They've won stuff in North Carolina. They've won the governor's race in Louisiana. They won a Senate race in Alabama. I'm not saying it's a good ruling,
But it's not, it didn't make things insurmountable for Democrats. And I think in all likelihood, Democrats are going to have some more wins in pre-clearance states this time around. So my point getting into all that is, one, attempts at voter suppression exist, but can be overcome. And two, the money question has been very much in Democrats' favor ever since Citizens United. Possible exception of 2014 Senate races, I guess, but I have to go back and look, review those numbers. I think there's parity, rough parity in 2014, but I have to go double check. But right now, it's a bloodbath. Not just presidential, but Senate too. And I have argued that money just isn't everything. You know, Trump was outspent and he still won. Message and free media is more important than just money advantage. But this time around, you know, where's the good Republican message in any of these states? Who's the Republican with the great message in North Carolina, in Iowa? I mean, the one hope is that Barrett helps a Republican Senate incumbent in a right-leaning state. Maybe it will. I don't see great evidence that this is juicing the Republican base anywhere. If anything, they seem sort of, I'm happy we got it, but I'm on to the next thing now.
I think that's right, Bill. I just think it is in and of itself a good thing, but I don't think there are going to be the political ramifications that there might have. If you told me, you know, 6 weeks before the election, RBG, or I don't even know, but whenever, close to the election, RBG is going to die, and Donald Trump is going to nominate Amy Coney Barrett, I would have assumed that that would have been the dominant story leading up to the election. And I, at the time, I thought it would redound to the Republicans' benefit. And I think it probably just doesn't even matter that much, actually.
I mean, it's still almost all about COVID.
Other than the fact
COVID.
That we got a good, you know, I'm happy we got her, but
right.
Politically.
Right. I mean, it doesn't motivate you to say, because there's no vacancy looming.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel as urgent to keep Republicans around for the next judge. You're happy you got a 6-3, you feel you got some cushion. And most people are mostly worried about coronavirus right now.
Yeah.
Right. There's no Republican senator that has, you know, proven themselves worthy and thoughtful on that subject.
Bill, we're not going to put any real money on these very tepid predictions we've made. Certainly, I myself cop to being a wimp here. I think Biden's going to win. But, you know, in gambling, there are these parlay bets. I'm not an expert on them, but I think that it involves, like, you could bet, like, you know, will the person sing the second chorus of, or, you know, the second verse of the Star Spangled Banner? Mm-hmm. Or like these ridiculous, like, which jerseys will the team wear? Stuff like that. So I think there's an interesting bet. I'm not predicting this is going to happen, but if I had to say, like, one surprise thing of the night that I would probably bet on, like, if it was, because usually, if you make these bets, maybe they're called prop bets. I don't even know. But usually if you make these bets, you know, you get like a big return, right? Because mm-hmm. you're betting something crazy is going to happen. I think Lindsey Graham losing is where I would go if I'm looking to make a surprise pick of the night. I think that's what I go with. What do you think? That would be pretty shocking.
One thing I have not had the time to do and I should do. I mean, I've looked at all the numbers. I haven't read a lot of the news coverage in the States. I mean, I think I should do that this weekend, catch up.
Yeah.
I
think I got the parlay. I think a parlay bet might be multiple. Mm-hmm. You have to have multiple things happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, is this a prop bet? I don't gamble.
I don't gamble either. I can't help you at all. Like, I know I've read more about, you know, South Carolina than other places. I don't really know, is there anything really popping in Kansas right now? there's something local in Kansas that's happening. Is there a particularly good ad in Kansas right now, or Alaska, for example? That stuff I'm a little fuzzier on, and I feel like I should
Kansas is Kobach, right?
No, it's not Kobach. It's Marshall. What's the people thought?
So the more moderate guy won the primary.
That's right. So people thought when that happened, oh, okay, take Kansas off the board. Kobach lost. And I said at the time, like, there wasn't a lot of polling, but what little there was said, hey, Barbully is polling pretty much dead even with either of these guys. Why'd you just take it off the map? Let's see what happens. And lo and behold, like, it's still a very close race and plenty of money is in there. I mean, Republicans are not at all sanguine about Kansas. Barbara Bully is a former Republican. You know, she is the model candidate for Democrats in Kansas.
I remember Sebelius. Wasn't Sebelius' dad a Republican governor or something?
That's what I mean. Sebelius was governor. Like, they have a Democrat governor now because Brownback was so terrible and wrecked the state. There's been mistakes
were made.
There's been a moderate backlash. And Democrats did okay in House races there. Sharice Davis picked off a seat in Kansas and they were close to another district. Sharice Davis is now considered practically a safe Dem in that seat, which is a suburban seat. So there's shifts happening in Kansas. And so I just want to get a little bit of a read on.
So is that your prediction though, with this trend? Are you going, you know, Bill Sherrod's lock of the week?
I'm not saying that.
Would it be too much to ask the suits of blogging heads to do like a dun dun dun, you know, like Sher's lock of the week? And if you're betting with Bill Sher, you're making money. You heard it here first. He's predicting Democrats will win the Kansas Senate race. Great show, Bill.
And one thing to add there, I just saw it last night, and I don't know what it kind of import's going to have, but apparently Ossoff had just an evisceration of Perdue in their debate last night.
I saw that clip, yeah.
And I don't know if that, you know, gets recirculated a lot in Georgia and if it makes a real difference. And I thought it was people thought the Andrew Gillum evisceration of DeSantis was going to be a game changer. In the Florida governor's race.
I don't know if there's something like, I'm not saying you're racist, but everyone, all the racists support you.
Right, right.
That was something like
right.
that.
Right. And that, you know, that lit up social media, but obviously was not the right message for Florida. And that didn't pan out. But I thought that Ossoff Cliff was much more of an on message, you know, right
it was
for
about
Georgia.
Coke, right. It's like,
I mean, he brought everything. He wrote a lot of threads. Basically say, you're a crook.
He did say that.
You're a straight up crook.
He said that. Yeah. He went there.
But then tied to coronavirus, like, you're a crook benefiting yourself and you're not doing right for the people who are suffering from this virus right now.
My only problem with Ossoff, people make, you know, I have gotten Kamala right, but Ossoff, he's like a character from, have you seen that show Silicon Valley?
I haven't seen it, but I know about it.
So you know the type. It's like just the stereotypical, like, Mark Zuckerberg or something like that, like a tech person. I mean, like, you could have created this guy in the factory to be on Silicon Valley. So I don't know how that plays in Georgia.
Well, that's why he's kind of a dweeby guy, you know? He's just dweeby, nebbishy guy. He's not like a big, you know, I don't remember the John Cornav from 2008, Big John, you know?
He's not like a big... you know, guy like us.
Right.
You know,
very,
like,
very powerful, very, very, very manly.
And alpha. He's not an alpha male like the DMZ.
Right. But that clip was so, he was solid. He was pointed. He was sure. You know, there was no hesitation. There was no stutter. Yeah, I think it sort of played against that type, which I would think would be in his favor if that was a widely seen clip in the state.
I don't know how it plays in Athens or what Macon, but it played really well
in Athens, I'm sure. Macon, I don't know
it
about.
It probably plays great in Athens, but I don't know how it plays in come up with a random small town in Georgia. I think it plays great on Twitter. I will say that.
Does it play well in the suburbs? That's I don't know if you heard, there was a New York Times podcast, the Daily Podcast. They did a thing about suburban women, you know, going with Biden. And they interviewed this one woman who they played the clip of Trump saying, you know, it's going to take over your suburbs, Cory Booker. And then they had the women were like,
Cory Booker's coming to the suburbs. Let me get my lipstick.
You know, well, this, he seems like a nice. I mean, I think part of what doesn't work for Cory Booker is he says mean things, but he just seems like a teddy bear of a guy. He seems like a there's like a dissonance when he tries to say harsh things because he just seems like a nice, sweet guy that would fit right in here in the DMZ.
So I think Ossoff may be a very good candidate for not just, you know, urban Atlanta, but suburban Atlanta. You know, he's not going to be the white rural choice, but he may be well enough to edge that out.
That will be an interesting one too. Are you predicting, is that the shares?
My Georgia prediction is runoffs.
Okay. Two runoffs.
Okay.
Now when will we know? Cause when will we know who actually wins these? When do these runoffs happen?
I think they're early January.
Both of them.
I think they're both early January. If someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's.
And then they're seated immediately, so you could have two.
Well,
the
big hope for them, what was the hope, was that because Ossoff does not get seated immediately. Warnock would in the special if he won 50% outright, he would get seated immediately. As with Kelly in Arizona, it's moot now, but they thought that might. Be a factor in the Barrett nomination. Now, maybe it's a factor in a stimulus deal. If there's going to be a lame duck stimulus deal, if those guys get seated right away.
Well, so it sounds to me like it's possible. We may not know who is going to control the Senate until January then.
I mean, if Democrats lose Iowa, North Carolina in the Senate race, and they only have netted three, then the two runoffs potentially make the difference. Well, they would need one of the two to get to 50.
That's a plausible scenario. Maybe that's the Sherlock of the week. You heard it here first.
I mean, I think if Democrats are losing Iowa and North Carolina, Georgia's not going to look too pretty either.
Well, we'll talk about that in the Parrot Room, Bill. That's our new name. Patented. Our new patented name.
We will be DM Zooming tomorrow.
I think we have to by law. I mean, I think maybe we should take a couple weeks off, but not the week. You can't take the week before the election off, Bill. It's we have people who need to hear from us.
My kids are yelling at me that because I'm trying to get them off screens. They're like, you know, you're obsessed with Twitter. You're on Twitter all the time. I bet you can't go off Twitter for one day. I'm like, I'm not going off Twitter before the election. Okay. Like I have work to do and I have to do it on Twitter.
I have to be on Twitter so that you don't have to be. I am sacrificing. I mean, I literally think that's true. I'd love to have the privilege, the luxury to not be on social media, but I can't, I have to.
Now, my kids have been pretty anti-political, you know, and mocking me for my interest in politics, but they love Joe Biden's Animal Crossing Island.
Yes, and Trump, as far as I know, is totally out of the Animal Crossing game altogether. He hasn't even gotten in this.
No.
He's going to lose the entire Animal
Crossing. Have you shown your sons the Joe Biden Animal Crossing Island?
I haven't had to. They show me. They know all about this.
They've been there. They've gone there.
Oh, yeah. We're at a point now where I am being told in like we are now. At some point we crossed the point where they know more about a lot of stuff than I do. I'm being informed.
Are there Animal Crossing characters wearing the Joe Biden gear?
I think not on my kids' island, but I think that. Yeah, I think there are.
I think you can get the gear.
You can get, they're called skins.
Right. I mean, you can get the hat, you can get the clothes, and bring that to your island.
Yeah. I had a whole conversation with my kids about this where I said, I don't think it's necessarily means Biden's going to win, but it's not good if you're Trump and you shouldn't give up any facet of a campaign, you know, like I don't think yard signs are the biggest. They're not that important, but you should try to win the sign wars, you know, and I feel the same way about Animal Crossing.
All right. We should leave it there. I'll talk to you tomorrow on DM Zoom. And I guess we'll talk here in the DMZ after the election next week.
We'll do it just to put a fine point on it. Bill is guaranteeing Kansas for the Dems. and he's guaranteeing that. Ironically, that still they're going to need both Georgia seats in January. So anyway, I think it's a bold prediction, but I applaud him. I applaud him for that.
Anyway, you think we can go Wednesday next week, or are you going to be too exhausted?
I think we probably have to go Wednesday.
Okay.
All right. The public's going to need to hear from us. So, I mean, it may be a rough day. I may not look and feel my best. I may feel like Arlo Guthrie going in for my, Army recruitment, vetting, but yeah, I think we should do it.
All right. So I'll see you Friday and I'll see you Wednesday.
You got it, man.
Okay.
And the D&D. Yeah.